Today on my table, we have PJ Tucker. He is an NBA player, a Hall of Fame defender. He's the toughest player I ever had the pleasure to work with. Actually, your name should be PJ Tucker.
I like that.
He's a dad, he's a husband, a mentor, a friend, and he has such a beautiful heart. I kind of see him more as the beauty and the strength. How about that for an intro?
That's a good one. I like that one.
PJ, can you take me back to where you grew up and how you grew up in, kind of like describe that environment?
I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and my whole life has been about basketball. So from birth, I feel like my first memories is all of like everything related to basketball and playing basketball and going places to play basketball, and like everything we did revolved around playing basketball. So it's something I've done my whole life. Like,
who introduced you to basketball?
My mom introduced me to basketball. My mom. To this day, my mom is still the biggest basketball fan I know.
Really?
All she does is watch games and college, pros. She's like all about basketball.
Did she play basketball at some point?
She did. She played basketball in high school until she had me.
What was it like for you in Raleigh?
I mean, it's a small city, but it's a tough city to grow up in. There's a lot of different things you get into, and it's funny because me and my friends even now talk about like all the things that we could have did outside of what we actually did, going to boys' club and playing basketball and being around each other. But, you know, the guys that kind of fared off, you know, end up like dead, selling drugs, in prison, doing all kind of crazy stuff. So basketball's always been something that just kind of kept me out of trouble from the streets.
Do you feel like basketball saved your life?
100%. Because without basketball, I would have been, I don't even know. There's no telling.
From the environment that you were in, what do you apply to your basketball career?
That's a good question. I think that's like part of the reason why I'm playing so long, outside of taking care of my body and being healthy, was just kind of the hunger to survive, right? To be great and survive, not just make it, but do the best of my abilities, mm-hmm. like just go further and further and further to not quit. Like, it's just, you know, where I'm from, it's just one of those mentalities. Like, you just...
Because people don't bet on you.
No, at all. So it's one of those things that you just born with from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the no-quit attitude, being able to fight for everything you got. And when you get it, fight for more. That's just how we're built.
I like that. Yeah, fight for more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely you. I would hate for you to defend on me if I was a player. And so you definitely bring that on the court, that mentality of like a dog mentality.
Your perspective is also interesting because you get to like watch me play and know like day to day, like see me walk in, mm-hmm. and me come and tell you how I'm feeling and we work and like, but you actually see me play and then work on me afterwards like that. I think that's like a crazy dynamic of like how people have no idea like the stuff we go through.
Yeah, that's the
to be able
the
to play.
Yeah,
yeah, no, it's totally different.
Yeah.
People can see like the hours spent in preparation to be able to play. And that's like a whole nother perspective.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows that. They don't know what we do behind the scenes before.
It takes hours of preparation or recovery.
Yep.
And so for me, like what's...
All the pills.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You were part of the functional medicine program. So every day I would make like a little bag of pills, you know, because they get tested. We know everything about their body. Then every day, here are your pills. Yes, you
so
can
nasty.
Perform, but you were taking them, and so I'm, you know, and most of the guys, like I was really proud of them for sticking with the program and sticking to, you know, honoring your body because you needed to play.
Any edge you can get, 82 game season, you need every single
plus
edge you can
playoffs.
Get. Yep, you need every edge you can get on a daily basis to be able to perform at such a high level.
What were the your mentors throughout your beginning and throughout your career, and what was the best piece of advice that they gave you?
Good question.
You have a good question.
I feel like I had like different mentors at different stages. It was just people that just kind of have your back and wanted the best for you and try to help you, you know, guide through trying to make it, right? And back then, trying to make it is like go to college, get a degree. Like nobody thinks you're gonna make the NBA in real life. So, you know, you don't even kind of talk about making NBA, even though that's like your goal. It's like more like going and getting a scholarship and, you know, in a degree or whatever. So most of my mentors early on was just people that were trying to help me get through school and get better at basketball. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, you know, the normal functionality of my AAU coach, between my AAU coach and the director of the Boys Club and like people with different organizations that I was in, just trying to help me in every way be able to be successful.
Do you remember a piece of advice that kind of like, that sticked with you?
I'll say the best one I got was when I actually got drafted my rookie year in Toronto. The coach of my team after the season told me, and it's funny now because when I think about what he told me, how I thought, and now how I feel about it is so funny and how that works. Well, he told me I need to go to Europe and learn how to be a pro. And I was like, and I'm on the NBA team and I'm looking at him like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not going to go to where? Like, I thought he was crazy. And in reality, he was so right. Like, he's part of the reason why I'm able to be where I'm at now, because if I didn't take the route and listen to him, then there's no way I'd be here now.
Because people think that playing in Europe is like a lower level.
Oh, yeah. They got no idea. It's really hard to play in Europe. Really, really hard.
Even the way they defend. I don't know shit about basketball, but I know a little bit. And I can tell you, like, the way they defend over there is different than the NBA. And, like, you got to find a way because they're not moving.
The way the game's called is different. The line being closer, there's no 3 seconds in the lane. So it's a lot. It's tougher to score the ball for sure. But just the mentality of playing in Europe, being on a team, living in another country, like, really becoming friends with guys that you just met, having to gel and come together to be able to win. It's a lot of adversity, a lot of stuff you go through throughout the year, been away from your family and friends.
Yes.
It's a lot, and you grow up real fast. You have to, or
that
you won't survive.
That builds your resilience.
Yeah, you won't survive if you don't. So it took my resiliency up 1,000,000% being there.
We got the face. Have you ever watched this movie Euphoria with Zendaya?
Oh, the show on HBO.
It's a show on HBO.
Yeah.
Have you ever been able to watch it?
I've seen a couple episodes. I haven't seen like all of it.
You have two daughters and one boy, two teenagers, one younger. And so I tried to watch Euphoria and I wasn't able to go through the first episode. It touched me so much. It was just so intense because I know that's, you know, the reality for some of the kids.
For sure.
And the first episode when she meet the guy in a hostel. I can't believe that this is really happening. I think it's important for parents to watch that series if they want to be able to understand the reality of what our kids are living. What is it like to raise two teenagers and especially a girl teenager?
Yeah, that's just a daily.
For that.
Yeah, that's some. That show's crazy because it make you. I think parents should watch it too because even though I haven't watched it all, just an episode or two of that where you get so uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like having a teenager, it's so wild and. Being able to like be comfortable enough to really talk to your kids and be able to like say anything and be open with them where they are open enough with you, you know, not so much as a friend, but really as a parent that cares more than, you know, trying to be a friend. And that, like, that little narrow road of that is really, it's really tough. And it's something that you, like, got to navigate and figure out. I think each parent is different because every kid is different, but it's tough, man. It's, I mean, it's tough. It's really tough for me.
I think it definitely opened your eyes and kind of like make you think I should make sure that I keep the communication with my kid.
For sure.
You grew up with no money. What's the difference with the way you lived and then now the way that you're raising your kids, knowing, having like both perspectives?
Yeah, it's, that's something I think about daily too. Like you, when you don't have anything and you don't look for anything, right? Like you work, you know I gotta work for everything. I know I don't have anything waiting for me. I know my mom worked hard, but you know, she can only do so much. So my expectancy of my parents was very low. Like it was more of like just having them and them being there rather than them being able to do things to help me out going forward. So my whole objective growing up was to be able to take care of my mom, whereas my kids, their whole objective is totally different. And even understanding my 17-year-old daughter, her perspective of asking me to get her a G-Wagon, right? Like, that's like, I'll only imagine me saying that to my mom when I was 17. Like, probably would have smacked me, like it's crazy. So,
you're lucky if you get a bicycle.
Yeah, right, for sure. So, it's funny that to make it to that point where, you know, the kids know that, you know, that you have things for them and, you know, they've lived a certain type of way throughout their life. Just building that legacy and leaving things behind for your kids, a big part for me, like going forward and fighting and really, you know, outside of love for the game, was more about taking care of my kids, make sure they're good.
Do they know your story? Do they have at least like that perspective of this is how my dad used to live and this is how I'm lucky to be able to live?
Yeah, they do, but it's been so long and so much has happened and being in NBA for so long now. I doubt they even think like that anymore. Kids get so, you know, they're so comfortable and they live, you know, they kind of, the life is so shaded, right? Like I don't have any worries, any problems. So, you know, I don't think they think about the stresses and the stuff that came along with everything they got with their dad to do. But that's fine with me. I don't feel like they have to live how I live. And
yeah,
you know, that's the part of working hard and doing stuff is that you don't want them not to go through what you went through. So, but the hard part is to make sure they still got the work ethic and still, you know, want to strive for things on their own rather than everything their dad did for them. So,
yeah, because like your boy is now into basketball, right?
Yeah, yep. So he's probably the toughest because he thinks he's in the NBA already. So, so keeping him humble is pretty hard, but it's cool. It's cool.
What are some of the advice that you give your daughter or your son?
Tell them to be honest, work hard, and stay true to who they are. I think a lot of times, especially little girls, man, you just try to input so much into them. You got to kind of let them go and trust them and trust the things that you told them. They'll listen to and put it in their life.
She's going
to
make mistakes. He's going to make mistakes too. That's how you learn, you know.
For sure. So just try to minimize on the mistakes and be able to help a way through. That's it. Just try to guide it through. Help guide it.
Being a parent is hard, huh?
It's hard work. It's hard. It's much harder than being in the NBA, for sure. It's a lot harder.
Super hard. Let's work a little bit on your picks, because that's something that people don't get work enough.
Because they don't like working on the picks because the picks suck.
Ooh, little trigger points. So trigger points in a muscle, it's kind of like a knot that developed next to a nerve. And so when you release it, it kind of make like a vibration, and that tells you that it's been released. So that's kind of like a really cool, it's part of the neuromuscular technique. And I like to do that a lot with my athletes. Doing okay?
Mm-hmm. You know, you've been an incredible source of knowledge for me when it came to knowing more about how to manage my ADD symptoms. And I've always viewed my ADD as a superpower, especially when I'm really interested in something, like understanding the body, treating the pain, or preventing injuries. I always find myself really diving into studying, researching, and practicing because I want to become the absolute best in what I'm doing. And when we were preparing for this interview, you really wanted to share your own experience with ADHD. You wanted to show how it can be harnessed and used to achieve greatness.
I think the imbalance that makes you like not care about things that you don't care about and really lock in on stuff that you do actually works, I think, both in my field and yours. But in life, where it's tough, especially growing up and not knowing and thinking I was just like bad at school, right? Like where I just didn't like school. And then I got diagnosed when I was 17, about to turn 18, and it completely changed my life.
Because at least now you know what you were going through.
Right. And it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And in my life, and I feel like if it could have happened a lot earlier, a lot of things could have been a lot better. Because afterwards, I mean, it's just like night and day after you get diagnosed, mm-hmm. and you understand it, and trying to navigate it early on.
You know you're not crazy.
I know I'm not crazy. And I know that this is not how I feel, and why am I feeling like this, and I feel like I don't have control over it, and you know, my mind saying one thing, and I feel like my body just not trying to do it, and like what's going on, and that fight, and then to finally figure it out, and then over the years be able to hone it and use it to my advantage. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think they should, you know, have classes about and teach, and for people to learn and people to understand themselves. Because I think a lot of times when they don't, then you have the adverse.
They're classified as bad as cannot learn, cannot focus, cannot. Right. Whether in reality, for a lot of ADHD people, like they're geniuses.
Right.
You know.
And not be able to voice your emotions. Like I could never tell anybody how I felt. Like it was just there. I just felt like it was just there, and there was nothing I could do about it. There's nothing why I could talk to about it. And once I got diagnosed and going to therapy every week and get medicated and figured it out and just using my advantage.
Yeah. And you know what's really interesting also is that when you have ADHD, at least for me, I have like several passions. Look, I'm gonna be interested in several stuff, but once I find one thing, I'm just gonna go like just crazy over it. And so, and that's interesting because like when I look at you, there is like several things that you're interested in and you know a lot about it.
Right.
Like wine,
yeah.
Coffee,
right.
Sneakers. There is things that you have an interest in and you are like almost, you know, like an expert.
Yeah. That's a part of like my disease almost where it's like, the things I'm interested in, I'm all the way, like I get all the way into it. I just dive right into it, right? Mm-hmm. And I become obsessed with it.
To me, it's a superpower. You know, I really don't see it as a disease. think once you know what you have, what type you have, then you can really use it at your advantage.
For sure. It is. And that's what it's about. That's the empowerment of it.
Mm-hmm.
Of learning about it, figuring it out, and then making it your superpower.
Yeah. Yay. There you go. There you go. A couple more.
So many people get diagnosed so late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have no idea. They think they're crazy. They have no idea.
Yeah. It made so much sense when I got diagnosed. I was like,
everything together.
That's why I react like that.
Yes.
Because you don't know what you have. You think it's your personality. You know, you think that, yeah, you, that's how you are.
Yep.
But parts of you knows that, parts of you don't want it. And you try to push it away, and the more you push it away, the more it comes back.
More sauce.
Yeah.
Coming back on your temple.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. And so it can affect your relationship. It can affect like
every part of your
work.
Life. Every part of your life.
Yeah. So once you know, that's amazing. Like how much it changed my life to at least know.
Friendships, everything.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna get a little bit more work on those trapezius. Cause like you're so intense, you hold a lot of your tension in your shoulder because you're like guarded all the time, which is your job. To make sure that your zone is guarded and protected. So there's something that people don't know about you and I found fascinating is your love for fashion and how you were involved in high fashion. Can you talk to us about that?
That's something that just kind of happened. Like, it's one of those things that you don't, like, I feel like, especially in like recent years of people like the boom of like social media, people showing off what they're wearing, especially in sports where nobody was like really into fashion, mm-hmm. but it's like you're into it and you don't know you're into it. And I feel like I've been into it my whole life. I just never got diagnosed in a sense. I've never
as a fashionista.
Like, yeah, like about like putting it into context of my life and how I grew up and what I care about and like, you know, getting dressed has always been at the top of the list of things I like to do.
Is it a way for you to express yourself?
1,000%. It's always been an expression. It's like how I feel that day. It's even hard for me to like pick an outfit for tomorrow until tomorrow because I don't know how I'm gonna feel. And I'll change and I'll change and I'll switch and flip and until I feel like that's how I'm feeling.
This morning, I'm feeling really happy and like excited. Like, yeah. What are you, you know, what are you choosing?
All right, so like today, I got the day off, we had a back to back, we're home, going to lunch, like cozy vibe, I want to be comfortable. Like a cardigan. Just cozy vibes with some loose jeans and kind of some slides. Just real cool, cozy. It's a cool day today. Might put a hat on or a Stelly, depending on my vibe.
How are you with like colors?
Yes, you know I love color. I'm all about color.
True story. Last year it's Halloween and he comes with this colorful. From head to toe, like a teddy bear. And I'm like, oh, what's your costume? Where is like, what costume?
I really have to.
Okay, yes, that was not a costume.
That 1,000%.
He felt really festive that day.
I remember that like yesterday.
Yeah, I want to try to find that picture.
We're going to find it. I got that picture for sure.
I was like, this is for sure a costume, but it wasn't.
Nope, it was not.
You're feeling kind of like, yeah, happy. What color do you tend to choose?
brighter colors. Brighter. Happy, yeah, for sure.
You were so happy that day.
Yes, I was feeling good. Like, that's usually an indicator I'm feeling good.
What about, like, a black color? What does that signify for you?
All black, it's just like, I didn't even feel like really getting dressed. I'm just throwing this on, like, I'm not trying to really do nothing. I ain't on nothing. Like, I'm just kind of in a cut. Like, I'm not trying to be sociable today. Like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, like
don't talk
like,
to me.
Like, yeah, I ain't, because I'm never wearing that. And if I am, like, I just don't care that day.
Yeah, so now, you know, if you work with PJ and he's wearing kind of like the dark color,
yeah,
don't even look at him.
Some black Air Forces, you know what I'm on.
Forget about it. In the summer, you work in the fashion industry, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that, because I think that's fascinating.
I pick and choose and do things that I kind of, you know, I feel like is next and is interesting to me and I want to kind of see myself do. It's always with sneakers and building crazy sneakers. Last year with Beauclair Converse, doing this Air Force One Converse pack now. We got another Converse Weapon Low coming, so it's like, with the shoes, it's always a constant of being able to build and create, come up with new stuff. 2 years ago with the Dolce thing, with the Giuseppe thing.
You talk about it like it's the Dolce thing. No, what is that? That's
tough.
Crazy.
Yeah, no, it's tough because a lot of times you had to create things and not able to go and be in Milan and be able to be in the offices and create stuff. So you have to be able to do the things and have vision yourself and inspire yourself to be able to come up with things on your own. So being here and working on projects like that, it's a little more tough to be able to have the creativity to be able to do that. But I think it's fun.
It's like, amazing that they trusted you to like be a creative.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you don't fully know what somebody's gonna come back with, and it's always funny being on the calls and with the other designers and people seeing the stuff and them actually liking what you come up with. It's kind of cool to be able to be an athlete and be able to create things and go in somebody else's lane where, you know, they're professionals and be able to hold your own.
What would you tell your younger self now that you've lived this life, those up and downs?
First, I would be like, dog, you ain't gonna believe this shit. That's literally what I would tell myself. Like, keep going, it's gonna be all right. You're not gonna believe this. You're not gonna believe it. Because my younger self would not believe if I told him how everything materialized and how everything that I dreamed came true and more. He wouldn't believe it. He'd be like, you're lying. There's no way.
Thank you, PJ. Yeah, that's a wrap. Good job. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
You know it.
Where can we find you? Where can we follow you so we can know everything that you have to offer?
My Instagram is @PJTucker.
You're not on like X,
nah,
TikTok. Nah. We're not gonna see you do like some dance.
I get in trouble on X, so I had to be done with X. So it's just Instagram.
All right, we'll write it down underneath.